This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the one and only show on the internet that dares talk about things like sci-fi, fantasy, dragons, spaceships, vampires, monsters, and the like. I am Dan Selke, the editor of winteriscoming.net, and I am here with Mia Johnson, editor of DorksideOfTheForest.com, a Winter is Coming writer. And we have a special guest this week, the illustrious luminary of stage and screen, Sarah Beth Pollock, who is a writer on Winter is Coming, writer on Hidden Remote, all around human Swiss Army knife of the written word. Sarah Beth, welcome to Take the Black.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. Excited to have you. And the reason we wanted to have you on is because, you know, this podcast is dedicated to all things basically nerdy pop culture. So we're talking, you know, again, dragons, zombies, spaceships, that sort of thing. But neither Mia nor I are really big fans or watchers of The Walking Dead, the 13-season strong zombie show that's been going on for a long, long time with multiple spinoffs either on the air or on the way. And you are. You are a Walking Dead person. You've been with it for a long time. And it's something that's like in our wheelhouse. And it's our final season. And I was like, we have to talk about The Walking Dead. Like it's big and important, especially on its final season. So I wanted to have you on to lend us your expertise on all things decaying flesh. Before we do, let's take a quick moment to say hello to everybody. Hey, everybody who's in the comments. Good to see you all. Hey, Jen. Hey, Matt. Christian. Julie. Always hello, great to see you. Stuart, Nicole, we have a full house today. Mm-hmm. Glad to see everybody. Okay. Mia, also, do you have any opinions on anything before we go into the questions you've been spoken to?
Any opinions on anything? No, I'm super excited to have Sarah Beth because I have long not watched The Walking Dead, so I'm happy to get like caught up on like probably five seasons, I'm sure.
Okay. Thanks. I guess we can just start there. So, Sarah Beth, you've been with it for since the very beginning, since season 1 to 13. How are 11. You enjoying 11?
It's only yeah,
oh,
11.
Oh, right. I don't know. Why did I say 13? I don't know.
Because it feels like it. It's been going on forever.
Good points. So, I guess the first question is just how are you enjoying this final Walking Dead season so far?
Well, you know, it's kind of hard because the buildup has been so great for this final season. And it doesn't help that, or maybe it does help, but, you know, we had that huge break between, you know, when they shut down for the pandemic, you know, going back to 2020, like they didn't air the final episode of season 10 because right. It wasn't finished. The pandemic, mm-hmm. They were literally like 2 weeks away from finishing it. So fans were waiting from like, you know, anywhere from, you know, they waited from March or April all the way to October to get that final episode. And then that was supposed to set everything up. And then you had the bonus episodes coming in February. Right. So we had those bonus ones. And so all of this was supposed to set everything up for season 11, right? Well, the problem is that you have so much anticipation that it's never going to be enough. Right. No matter what they do. And I'm starting to kind of see that truthfully, like there's no way that it can actually satisfy everything because there's so many people, there's so many characters, there's so many plots. They've deviated from the comics and, you know, everything that was supposed to happen in the comics isn't going to happen. It can't happen because Rick Grimes is gone. Carl Grimes is gone. Like, so there's a lot of questions out there. And so, you know, am I enjoying it? Absolutely. Do I think it's going to be enough? I don't know. And that's what I'm curious to see.
That's already starting to sound like a little show that we cover here. little season 8 of a show that we usually talk about.
I don't know what you're talking about. Well, that's like an interesting question. So I do know enough to know, like you said, that Walking Dead, you know, was on for 11 years. And a lot of the principals like Michonne and Rick and Carl, they're all gone. And you know how it all ends, I assume, because you've read the comics, or at least know, like, even I know how it ends, frankly. And I just, like, picked it up from just, yeah, like, the internet over the years. Do you think they will just go with like the ending that's already there in the comic, just sub in different characters, or will they just go in some different direction, do you think?
Well, so that's an interesting question, because about 2 years ago now, they announced that they were going to do these Rick Grimes movies.
Right.
So Rick Grimes is supposed to come back in some form, which means he probably wouldn't be able to come back. I mean, if you know what happens in the comics, you know that he doesn't actually get to the end. Spoiler alert, but he doesn't. So, you know, and then his son is dead, but we have his daughter who isn't in the, you know, like who isn't alive in the comics. So there's these possibilities, and he has another, and then he has another son, RJ, with Michonne, that he doesn't know about. Very Maury Povich stuff going on there. There's, you know, a lot of drama there. But the, so could he come back? Yes. Should he come back? Probably not, because it would overshadow everything else that they've been building, like independently of Andrew Lincoln, because Andrew Lincoln's going to have this really great opportunity to have these movies that are tied into the greater universe with the, you know, with the helicopter people, the CRM. They're huge in World Beyond. They're huge in Fear the Walking Dead. So I feel like they're setting up a lot more, because it's just because this show's ending doesn't mean that the series, the franchise is ending. And so I think they're being very careful about that. So I do think it would be neat to have him show up, but I don't think there's a way to do it where that doesn't overshadow everything else. And I feel like that would be unfair to the actors. You know, that would be like if I don't know, if one of the, you know, if Ned Stark showed up in the finale of, you know, Game of Thrones, like that's all anybody would talk about. You know what I mean? Like it just, I don't know that it would be fair to everybody who's been there along the way.
That's, you were pausing for an example, and I'm like, I bet you says Ned Stark in Game of Thrones. And I was correct. Because
you know
my head would go too. Yes.
You know me well.
That's what I asked. Okay, so sometimes on this show, Mia knows that I like to complain and whine a lot about franchises getting too big and just seeming to be just these almost untenable, enormous monsters that you have to devote your life to watch if you want to understand. And like you said, like The Walking Dead show is ending, the franchise is not, because I know we have World Beyond on, we have Fear of the Walking Dead on, we have Tales of the Walking Dead coming, we have a Walking Dead comedy, apparently. We have the Rick Grimes movies in the works. To you, is this a good thing that there's going to be all this Walking Dead stuff to see both concurrently and after the show is over? Or is there a the Carolyn Darrell spinoff. I got about that too. Or is it getting too big, or are you here for all of it, or somewhere in between? Probably the third one.
You know, I think it depends on the execution for me.
Sure.
It's absolutely the execution. There's one of the things, you know, when I was working on Undead Walking, one of the things that you see among the fans is that it's really grown to be very fan specific or character specific, which in some ways really jeopardizes the way the stories are told, because some fans will only tune in for certain stories.
Really?
Wow.
And, you know, maybe that's why they have a Carol and Daryl spinoff. I don't know. But, you know, there's something to that. And so it does challenge the way that, you know, I will say, like, I'm so excited about Tales of the Walking Dead, because it opens up every possibility. Anybody could come back. You know, anything could happen. People, you know, you can tell stories. Now we see people die and you're like, hey, those people can come back. Like, we can have them come back now. And that would be great. The challenge is that you don't want to have the same story being told over and over again. And I think that's what I think Fear the Walking Dead has really been able to reinvent itself, because now, like, they have to deal with the nuclear landscape, and they have so many things that they have to deal with that don't really have to do with the apocalypse, but they do. And The Walking Dead right now, it feels very, you know, who's the villain of the week? Who's the, you know, this is what's, you know, the walkers are out there. Oh dear, we don't have enough food. We don't have it, you know, and it's like, I don't knock it. I love it. But after a while, it gets repetitive, because we're in the same area of the same, you know, the same windmill stopped working again. The same wall fell over again. The same, you know, the same challenges. It would be nice to branch out, you know, and Robert Kirkman has that story about the Rick Grimes brother, and it's set in Spain. Like, how cool would that be? That's a, you know, a comic book story that a lot of fans are familiar with. But wouldn't it be nice to kind of jump the pond and go see what's going on elsewhere and see how other people are doing it and dealing with it in different time periods? You know, like that was my big pet peeve with fear, because it started in Los Angeles. And I've never really related to The Walking Dead the way some fans have, because it's set in the South and I'm in San Diego.
Sure.
So fear, I was like, great, they're doing LA. This is great. I can get this. Because I mean, everyone wonders, like, what would you do in LA if something terrible happened? How would you get out? The 405, like, there's no way. But then they blew up, they blew it up in the end of the first season. So LA's gone, San Diego's firebombed, like, you know, they shut that door. And now it feels like more of the same, or did, but now they've, you know, detonated a few nuclear bombs. So it's different now.
That's a good point. Like, I didn't think about that. There are so many different spinoffs, but you're still staying in the same area of Georgia, is it? Is that where they are? I always forget.
Now they're in like close to Washington, D.C.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. I like Julie's suggestion. Do one in Australia, says Julie, where she is from. And also get rid of the walkers. I love that. How about The Walking Dead, but no zombies? Just, yeah.
Well, it beg the question, though? Like, won't they run out eventually? Like, these massive herds of people, like, haven't they killed, you know, like 10 years into the apocalypse? Like, how many more dead people are there? There's more, you know, it seems like those numbers would have to diminish. Just
I don't think AMC wants you to be asking that question, or I'm pretty sure they would be horrified to no one. Someone brings it up in a boardroom. It's that meme where it gets tossed out the window is what I'm talking about. Okay. I guess my last question for Walking Dead stuff, and just say whatever you want to do about it. But what to you do they need to do to end this? I mean, like, really iconic, important series strong, because it's, like you said, a lot of expectation. Whether they like it or not, they are a historic series. They've paved the way for a lot of new stuff. What does it need to do to end well, whatever that means to you?
I think that, you know, one of the things, as the cast has grown, I think that they really have to be mindful of starting new stories in season 11, because they've initiated quite a few new stories in this new season. Not getting too into that and focusing on wrapping up some stories, because there are characters, honest to God, they're just not there anymore. No one knows where they went. No one knows why they went, you know, and it's become the running joke, right? Like, you know, what happened to Heath? Well, Heath crossed the bridge and that was it. That was like 5 seasons ago and no one's seen him since, but he's on that Fox show, you know? And so you wonder, like, you know, you need to be able to wrap up all of the stories as best as you can, so that you don't run into the problem of, you know, feeling unfulfilled at the end of the day.
As Jen says, they should be. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that's the biggest thing, because I feel like that in any show, you know, you want to make sure you have that closure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it'll be interesting. I mean, like, I might pick it up again, because I am curious about, like, you know, the ending is so big and important a show. And I'm curious to see whether they can land it and how the ending goes down. As Jen says, they should be glad they don't have Captain Trips or Flag. Jen, you're still hurting me, because I did not like that Stan show very much, honestly. It was fine. But you know what? I bet that Stan show wouldn't have gotten made if Walking Dead hadn't of really popularized a big post-apocalyptic boom.
Yeah, well, so, look at Why the Last Man just premiered, like, it's big. It's still big.
The Last of Us is coming on HBO. Yeah. Like, it is a zombie renaissance. And now they're going to try to do a vampire renaissance after it's over. We're going to do the vampire, but we'll see if that's successful.
Yeah.
All right. Any more Walking Dead closing thoughts, Sarah, before we go to another topic?
I think I'm excited. As crazy as it sounds, like, it's a lot of Walking Dead, but I'm still excited to see what they do. And the sky's the limit now that they're not following the script. They've gone off the script a little bit. So it's fun to see, you know, what they'll come up with.
There is an ecstasy in being free from the script, and hopefully they can double down on it. As Jen says, not the new one, even though I love Eric from True Blood was in it. I think about our vampire conversation. Jen, we're going to have lots of vampire talk over the next couple of years on this show. I guarantee it. They're trying to bring him back. I don't know if it'll work, but they're trying to bring him back. Moving on, let's go to a segment we don't have regularly in the show, but I wish we did. It's time for Game of Thrones stars and other celebrities wear fancy clothes. Woo! Ooh. The Met Gala happened a couple of days ago, which is like nominally a charity event for the Metropolitan Museum of Art, but it's just it's just become wear the craziest outfit you can and show it off. The theme this year, I think, was
It was American fashion. Yeah. It was like America
lexicon of fashion. What does that mean? I couldn't tell you, but we had a couple of celebrities show up, some Game of Thrones stars, some other people, and I thought we would just look at their looks and go ooh or eh, or whatever comes to mind. So let's roll it.
So who do we have here?
We have Kit Harington and Rose Leslie, man and wife from Game of Thrones, Jon Snow and Ygritte, him in a pretty simple white tuxedo and her in a yellow, fluffy, flouncy, betrayed number. What do we think, fashion experts?
You're not going to go into like who made it? Like you have to, I thought you would say like, you know, this is Valentino. This is
I don't know, but I can make it up. This is the French designer Jean-Jacques Deluc, and Kit Harington was wearing Men's Warehouse. No, it's the other way around. I mean, Kit Harington's suit is, you know, it's a tuxedo. I do like the long train on Rose Leslie's, though. I don't know about the color, but it's fun. It's flouncy. I don't know how it's American either, but as I said, I think the themes are just kind of like, do whatever.
Yeah, looks like a lot of people, I was going to say, took some liberties. This is, both of their looks is quite simple. It's just kind of like, I'm here. I didn't really want to like show up, or I don't know if they paid homage to anyone really with their looks. Maybe they did. But yeah, it's really on the like in the middle scale. Like it's not bad, but it's not like fashionably outstanding and out there, you know, compared to so many of the other people like Lupita or I think J-Lo had like a really wild and out there outfit.
I didn't see hers. I know that Lil Nas X had like a triple armor gown thing. Sarah Beth, yeah. Any takes? Any hot fashion takes?
You know what? I would actually say this reminds me of very classic Hollywood. I think it's very, I could see this in like the 1950s. Like even that color is very like Palm Springs-ish. Mm-hmm. So, I think that they went safe and went classic, you know, and they didn't feel like they needed to go cosplaying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even the kids kind of got like a, what is that? Humphrey Bogart sort of, you know, white suit with the bow tie. If we can say anything. Yeah. The guys usually play it safe. There weren't many guys this year that like really went out the way they did in some years either. Like you said, Lil Nas X one. Timothée Chalamet, our favorite Dune star, wore Converse and sweatpants with kind of like a waist jacket, a regular jacket. So I'm trying to think like if there was a stand. Yeah.
What are you talking about?
The work from home American.
I kind of agree with Julie that the better fair skin for that isn't really worth the color. I can't talk about the bodice being bad for her boobs, but apparently that is Julie's opinion and we respect it. I did really enjoy Maisie Williams, what she wore this. I'm going to go ahead and describe it as, this was designed by Kate Blanchett on the set of Lord of the Rings. She was playing an elven powerful queen and she just kind of transmuted it into this. It looks like she is a fairy queen from ancient English legend, and she is going to walk a runway in a twilight forest among her other kind of fairy brethren. I agree, Nicole. I don't really recognize her. I love the I love like the face. I love how high the forehead is. I love the severity of the makeup. I think this is great. What do you guys think?
Okay. Do you want the answer to her inspiration?
I looked it up. Yes, I do. Okay.
So this comes from Marie Claire. She explained that her outfit was designed by her boyfriend, Ruben Selby, and inspired by The Matrix.
Ooh, I could see that.
Just in time for the movie to come out. I was brought up on American Icon. She says, these women in films had shaped the woman I became. So, yeah. To me, it's kind of giving more of like a classic, maybe like 1920s, definitely not the hairstyle, but there's something about like the dark brow, the makeup, and kind of the hair. It's almost like a Betty Boop sort of, you know, classic look. But I can see the Matrix too, at least with the dress. Maybe not so much the makeup.
Totally see the Matrix.
Oh, wait, like she's got the little Trinity spirals, maybe.
Yeah. I was going to say Adam's Family, like a grown up Wednesday Adams. Like, I could see that too.
I completely see Wednesday Adams. I mean, I just like how weird it is. Jen is not a fan, but it's just so bizarre. She almost looks like insectoid in this pose with her green nails. See, this is an example of like if Rose Leslie's skin tone's a little weird for white, like yellow, this is like she's also very pale, but like the contrast with the black is very Tim Burton, very kind of punchy. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So weird.
Very Christina Ricci.
There you go. She's coming back. And finally, we have not a Game of Thrones person, but I wanted to include Elon Musk, but Elon Musk's partner and Canadian, singer lady, Grimes in a Dune-inspired outfit, because it's Dune. And yeah, I can see Dune. That's like the Fremen mask they wore to hydrate themselves and sort of the still suit they call them in Dune, the kind of armor plating. I mean, and she has a sword and a book, so you can kill somebody and then journal about how you feel bad about it. So it's going to have props.
You know, it really does speak in an ironic way about the Fremen and this balance of wealth and inequality, especially between the rich and the poor. And so it's kind of, to me, a little insulting that she would wear that outfit at such a luxurious event. This is just me flexing my Dune knowledge. I listened to 2 hours of the audiobook and I still have a lot more to go.
Oh, nice. Are you enjoying it?
I really am. I really, really am. So I'm glad I decided to plunge into the depths of this novel. But I mean, as a look, it's pretty decent. It's very kind of maybe like video game reminiscent with the sword and the metallic look.
And a Mortal Kombat.
I don't mind it at all. Again, it just kind of speaks to how, like, when you say America and you're like, okay, go with that theme and run with it. We've got books, we've got movies, we've got old Hollywood, we've got denim and cowboys. It's like, okay, maybe we should have been a little more specific.
I mean, Frank Herbert, who wrote Dune, was American. That's something, I guess. All right, Sarah Beth, any takes on our final look? I half wish this was a fashion podcast, even though I'm not qualified in the slightest, but this is our final look of the evening.
Look with a W, L-E-W-K. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
No, I actually cracked up when I saw that you said someone from Dune, and then I saw that it was her. I cracked up because if you know Elon Musk, he's a huge gamer. Like, he grew up as a computer gamer. And it struck me as, because I've read that there was a huge party afterwards and he was at the party and like it was a big deal. And it made me think of Comic-Con when you have a guy who has a hot girlfriend who dresses up as like some character. And the guy spends the entire time just so excited because his girlfriend looks so hot as this cosplay. And so that's kind of where I went with that. And I love the Musk family, but I definitely, I could see that happening because I fell down this rabbit hole of Elon Musk Twitter one day. And he was talking about how he had to stop playing computer games because it just sucked up all his time to build rockets and stuff.
So I
could see this. I could see her saying, hey, I'm thinking about Dune, and just being like, yes, whatever you're going to say after that, yes, that's what you're wearing.
I am all for speculating about the private life of Elon Musk and Grimes. It's there's no way it's not fascinating.
Yeah. I have nothing else to say on that topic.
All right. In that case, I think we can move on. And to the portion of the show where we look at leaked images from Game of Thrones prequel House of the Dragon, and I blather on for a few minutes trying to pack the needlessly complicated mythology and family relations into a small window of time. So House of the Dragon, Game of Thrones prequel being made right now, due out next year sometime, we're not exactly sure when. They were shooting inside for a long time and now they're out and about with outdoor stuff, and just you know, this is a Game of Thrones show, first and foremost. At least that's the way it started. And it's always going to check in on Julie. I'm going to blather in 1 second what they're doing. And just so to set the stage, Mia, can you know what? Let me try and put you through the test and see if you can do this. Can you set the very basic stage for what House of the Dragon is about after I've blathered this long about it for so many weeks?
You know, it's really funny. I think once I start writing more about it, I'll get it. I just know that it's two families kind of at
one
war,
family.
Two sides. Well, okay, right. One family at war is kind of split into two divisions, right? Because what?
Yes.
The king?
Because the king dies.
Die,
and then we got his eldest daughter vying for the throne and her younger half-brother vying for the throne. Everyone fighting. That's the gist. And we have here, first, we have Eve Best in costume as Rhaenys Targaryen. You can tell she's in costume because she has the head wrap along the Targaryen white blonde dyed hair or a wig, I'm not sure. And that's cool because she is a main character, Rhaenys Targaryen. And I'm going to, okay, let's see if I can, okay. So Rhaenys is known as the queen who never was because she was the daughter of the son of King Jaehaerys Targaryen. And she had an uncle, that son's younger brother, Baelon. And then her father died young. And then and because she was like the daughter of the crown prince, the issue came up. Okay, so does she now become the heir to the throne, or does her uncle, the younger brother of her father? And the king chooses the uncle because he's a man. And this is a scandal. She hates it. Her husband, who's Corlys Velaryon, hates it. Even the king's wife like leaves him for a while over. It's a whole big thing. And so basically she's known. And then there's later when the uncle dies, she's like, okay, now make me queen. Do it now. And the king chooses to give the heirship to the uncle's son rather than her and her son. So basically she's seen as this figure who should have been queen, but was passed over. And by all accounts, she'd be a good queen. She's like one of the, you know, I always talk about House of the Dragon, how there aren't really any good characters. And that's true. Like most of them are really compromised. She's one of the kind of exceptions. She's a good person. Like she's has good ideals. She's a good leader, yada, yada. She rides a dragon because they all do in this show. And that's kind of her story. So naturally, when it comes to the daughter and the half brother fighting, she's on the daughter's side. Both because the daughter is married to her gay son, Laenor, and because she's going to be in the side that's going to be is a woman should be able to rule. She's a good character. She's an important character. And it's just cool to see her in costume. And I think she's with Rhaenyra Targaryen's sons, who she's married to Rhaenys' gay son. So they're not his kids. She has an affair with another person, which is why they don't have Targaryen blonde hair. Okay.
Now,
did
those
any of that
most...
get through?
Those are the most details I sucked up in about 3 minutes, but I got the general gist of it. So those two sons, her grandkids are in the picture and they're not of Targaryen blood.
They're her grandkids.
Right. Fascinating.
Did Sarah Beth... did that get through? Audience, did that get through?
I absolutely, and I'm not even, I was right there with you.
Okay. Good.
I'm just impressed because they don't have the Targaryen blonde hair. So like it's very lustrous and healthy in those pictures because, you know.
Yeah, like not dyed and not a wig at all. Just like bring your own hair for once.
All right. Natural.
And the other picture is less complicated. So it's great. So here we have they're on a beach. There've been a lot of shooting on a beach. So what's cool here is that we think they're filming a thing called the War for the Stepstones. Oh God. Matt Smith's character, Daemon Targaryen, who is the younger brother of King Viserys. And I think like a second cousin to Rhaenys. He has a whole thing where he goes off and he fights some people on a bunch of islands. And we think these guys are from Essos, which is where Daenerys hung out for most of the series, Which is just interesting because he fights against like the free cities who are forming an alliance to have dominion over these islands, and he's going to take them back because he's a war hungry kind of Matt Smith looking guy. And it's just cool to know that we'll get some people from Essos, you know, where Khal Drogo is from, where Daenerys hung out. It won't just be a Westeros all the time show. And if they're from Essos, they wear more colorful costume, which is nice. That's why they're in bright reds and yellows. Whereas if you are a Westerosi, you're mostly in grays and browns.
That makes a lot of sense. So here they are, what, gathering treasures that they've plumaged? Or
also, I don't know. Like it looks like their luggage got dumped out of their plane, doesn't it? Like just halfway through. Yeah.
They've got some eggplants, some green leafy greens.
Maybe it's a trading vessel that got run aground or diverted by the war effort. It's a naval battle. And Matt Smith rides a dragon. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it looks like a good stash wherever they are. I mean, it looks like they've got some good stuff.
It absolutely does. Yeah, I want to reach in there. And maybe perhaps they're about to have lunch or something. And it's all, the catering's all in there. So, okay, I think that went pretty well. I believe I kind of laid it out, and you know, like House of the Dragon, you know, like Game of Thrones, it has that aspect to it where there's like all these characters and they all are related to each other in certain ways. And I mean, it seemed to work for Game of Thrones. People got onto it and they looked it all up and seemed to like the complexity was a selling point. And I'm sure HBO is hoping that stays true because this story has a very similar sort of vibe where there's a lot of complicated relations and backstory and character drama.
I like Christian's comment. I don't have to watch it now. I know the whole thing. I know we're practically experts, but yeah, I think it is getting to know, like when there's things to unfold and there's relationships to discover about people, like, oh, I didn't know that they were married. I didn't know that she had an affair and those aren't her real children. That stuff gets really juicy and interesting.
It does,
it's very drama worthy.
I mean, it's the same reason why people watch Maury Povich. It's just, but they're all like on dragons and have expensive wigs and the budget is great.
Do you always have two Maury Povich references in your Pick the Black Life?
Well, you made one, I'm trying to keep up with you with Eurosis, basically. I think this is the first Maury Povich thing we've ever done in Pick the Black Life.
I love it.
But it won't be the last. I never actually watched Maury Povich. Is that the one where they always said he's not the father, and then the mother like runs screaming from the room?
Yeah, the results are in.
Okay.
He's not. Okay, yeah. Which you should totally use for the show, by the way. You should absolutely use that as, you know, they're revealing different relationships. Be like, yeah, the results are in, and this Targaryen is not a Targaryen. And then, you know.
You are not the father.
Yeah.
That is a great idea. And then someone runs screaming from the castle with their arms wailing. Good idea. We'll put it down. We'll incorporate that a little later. All right. It's time for me to stop blathering and turn the blather mic over to Mia Johnson. Mia, what are we talking about next?
Oh, so I am very excited this week that we got a trailer for the Hawkeye series, which was it was expected. They did kind of announce it the day before, but let me tell you, I was not really excited for this. I was like, I don't really like Hawkeye as a character. He's okay. He's laughing stock of the Avengers, et cetera, et cetera. But this kind of did it. So I think we should take a look at it and we can kind of talk over it too. And yeah, let's just roll right into it.
All right, let's do it. This is the first Christmas we've had. Okay. So here we have immediately, right? It's a little, what I like about the trailer is that it's lighter, right? Like we've had intense mind kind of screwing up of WandaVision, the intensity of Falcon and the Soldier, and the sci-fi weirdness of Loki. Now, what about a Marvel comedy? Huh? How about that?
Yeah.
Although
yeah,
that it's scene still with them, I was going to say, that scene with them in front of the theater, that was definitely Batman. That out
Ooh.
There. That was almost mirroring every Batman origin story.
Yes, Hawkeye is the most Batman-y of the Avengers, isn't he? Because he can't be the Superman because he's useless.
Yeah, we've got Martha and Thomas Wayne parallels going on, but Hawkeye survives as the parent of his children. It looks like he survives through this, but he's also, we see that he meets this girl who is Kate Bishop, Hayley Steinfeld, and she is kind of, I'm not really sure what's going on between those two. She's kind of like her own mini Hawkeye, and maybe she's running amok, I don't know, putting a bad name to him or something like that. But it's almost like a little buddy cop comedy. We've got a lot of action. It's set during Christmas time, which I wrote about on Wake. I really, really love that. This kind of like Rockefeller. We've got the play, the musical that people won't stop talking about.
I mean, that is a great idea. An Avengers musical. But only people go see that in real life. Like, just that would happen. That would absolutely happen. Yeah. So might as well include it in your fictional universe.
Yeah, and we've got like an iconic recreation of the shot from Avengers, which was a really nice touch.
I didn't even notice that. That's cute.
Yeah, so yeah, coming out basically this Thanksgiving, and then I guess it'll roll into December with the holiday season. And what they did mention was, you know, if you watch the end of Black Widow, they have that scene with Julia Louis-Dreyfus and the character Yelena. And she's like, hey, you got to take Hawkeye out because he basically killed Black Widow, even though that wasn't really the case. So that's going to be interesting to see how all that fits in there as well. And originally, like I said, I was like, I'm not really sure if I care about what Hawkeye is doing. You know, I thought the plot with his secret family was kind of silly, but these Marvel TV shows have really done a lot to make you care about the characters and care about their emotions and the things that they're going through. So my fingers are crossed that we're going to be, you know, 4 for 4 with this and seeing, I guess, another emotional story and maybe making me really, really like Hawkeye. Who knows?
Can I ask you, 4 for 4, so are you not counting What If?
No, I'm going more on just like the, you know, the live action series, the canon stuff. What If could be canon, though. They still haven't.
Sorry, Beth, any?
No, I think it's a really interesting opportunity to incorporate the holidays and do like a real holiday thing. And that, I mean, that's Batman Returns, but also I just think it's really cool that it's, you know, it's something different and being able to, I agree with Mia, like, you know, you get to get the emotional connection that I think has been missing with this character the whole time. Mm. So, you know, it's a great opportunity.
Yeah. It's definitely cool that they found a way to distinguish all these shows so far. They've always done a good job. They're still doing a good job. As Christian says, trailer was good. Very Die Hard-ish, which, yeah, mm-hmm. I can see that. Christmas, sort of like action comedy. I get that. And Nicole says, trailer looks a little cheesy, but I'll watch it. I'll probably watch it too. And before we go on to our final lightning round segment, really quick, you guys watched anything? Because I just want to mention that I'm finally watching Ted Lasso on Apple TV Plus. Ooh. Drag Race ended, so I canceled Paramount Plus, good riddance, and I got Apple TV Plus. And yeah, it is as charming and cute and funny as everyone says. So recommended.
Yeah. I've been continuing to watch What We Do in the Shadows. I'm making my way through season 2. I love them so, so much. And I also am watching right now Star Wars Visions, which comes out next week. I cannot give a review, but this social embargo is up. So I will read verbatim my tweet from earlier today, which says, I said, I watched the first short for Star Wars Visions. Oh, my God. These are seriously, these are shorts. So it's bingeable, but it's mind boggling because this is Star Wars and anime. But it's both and it's awesome. So that's all I can say for right now. But maybe I'll talk a little bit more about it next week.
Did you get to the Shadows episode that starred a certain Star Wars icon in a guest role?
Not yet, but I'm really, really excited.
Then we'll come back to that next week. Sam, what about you? You watched anything worth talking about?
Watching Titans, and week's episode is going to be a big one for fans of the comics. They're just rolling out characters that have never been seen in live action, so it's going to be a kind of really interesting episode. I've seen it, so that's why I said it. But Fear the Walking Dead screeners just dropped today, so I'm really excited to see that. World Beyond embargoes up next week, so we'll talk about that. But I have to say, Why the Last Man is really fascinating, and I purposefully didn't read the comics. My brother-in-law has the whole collection, and this has been a show he's been waiting for, and I'm really interested to see how this works. It's a really interesting concept it's one of those things where I don't know if I love it and I don't know if I hate it, but I don't think I feel strongly enough about either way because it kind of bugs you in some ways and it doesn't bug you in other ways. And I don't understand how civilization fell apart in like 3 days because the men were gone. But we'll see. We'll see.
It looks pretty cool. I want to check that out. And I probably will just later in the week. Why the Last Man? And as Julie says, nothing goes Britannia. And the quest to find someone to talk about Britannia with on this show. Julie, do you just want to come on and talk about Britannia? I that would be good because I cannot find a guest who has seen it. So Julie.
The governor from The Walking Dead is on that show.
Who is? Oh, is he? Good for him. Getting work, getting a gig. So Julie, this is an invitation to come on Take the Black and extol the virtues of Britannia because it needs to be extolled.
Do it, Julie.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, we have our final segment, the WIC News Lightning Round. Ciao. Where we go through news stories we didn't really have time to fit into the main show and react to them in 20 seconds and no more, but sometimes less if we can have good internal clocks. All right. So we're going to go around. I think Mia, you go first, then I'll go, and then Sarah, you can go, and we'll keep going that until we're out of stories. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. Ready.
Okay. Mia Johnson. Andrew Garfield said that picture of him on the set of Spider-Man No Way Home, it's fake.
Oh, what absolute BS. Someone said, we caught you in 4K, man. There's video. There's all this evidence out here pointing to him actually being there and Tobey Maguire, too. So I am like, he is definitely in this movie. If he's not, okay, fine. You know, I'll pay you a lot of money. But my bet is that he's on there and he just really has to cover it up and say, hey, I'm not in this movie. You know, sorry to ruin your expectations.
100%.
All right. So, okay. Dan, you're answering this one next?
Yes.
Okay. So, Dan, The Boys wraps filming on season 3.
Great show, or at least like really, really timely show, right? It came along just at the right time where we're all sick of superhero stuff and here's superhero things, people who think superhero movies. I'm glad it's coming. I'm going to see it again. I hope it comes out this year, probably next year. There are like behind the scenes things where, so fascinating behind the scenes, but you'll learn that later. All right. Sarah Beth, Amazon is working on a live action She-Ra series. What do you think?
So it's actually from the same people that did the Princesses of Power on Netflix, but they're not related. So it's a standalone series, which I think is fascinating because I loved the original story where He-Man and She-Ra are long lost twins. So I think it's a really great opportunity to go back to their 1980s origin story.
Very cool. Yeah. I can always tell because we have guests on the show. They never take all the time because they're smart. And I don't know why we can't ever do it correctly. But good. Excellent. All right. Mia Johnson. WandaVision wins Marvel Studios its first ever Emmys.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's Marvel's first Emmys. They won 3 creative Emmys. So production design, costume, and original music for Agatha All Along. So not the big Emmys, you know, like acting. Elizabeth Olsen is still nominated. Paul Bettany. So we'll see what happens this Sunday. But it's still cool to be like, hey, Marvel Studios, they have Emmys now, just like The Mandalorian and Star Wars.
Very nice. Yeah, they're taking over the world.
All right. This is for you, Dan. Halloween Kills will come out on Peacock and at the same time as in theaters.
Good. Okay. So there's this narrative now where because Shang-Chi succeeded, everyone's going to put out in theaters. But I feel like I'm going crazy because Black Widow made a lot more money. And apparently that was a failure. I feel like I'm going nuts. So I am cool with people still doing the in theater and streaming at the same time thing. I think it's good for customers, good for consumers, good for the pandemic. And I don't think, I don't think. Okay. Sarah Beth, HBO Max is already developing a spinoff of the upcoming The Batman movie, all about Colin Farrell's Penguin.
So I'm bummed that they're not using Gotham because Gotham had so many wonderful characters, but I am really happy to see Warner Brothers. I think that's one of the biggest benefits of having these streaming services is that you're able to have these spinoffs and not lose characters and only have them in one movie. So I think it's a great thing to show that they're really invested in the Batman universe because that's something they haven't.
it's wild now today. All right. Mia. Helen Mirren is hosting a Harry Potter game show called Harry Potter Hogwarts Tournament of Houses.
Yeah, this is both cool but also a little bit disappointing because it's the 20th anniversary of Harry Potter, the first movie, when it hit theaters, and everyone's like, oh, is there going to be a reunion? You know, what cast is going to come back, et cetera, et cetera. And then Warner Media today is like, hey, we're going to have a game show, and it's hosted by Helen Mirren. So that's exciting. Mm-hmm. There will be, like, some guests, we think, and they might show up, but I don't think Daniel Radcliffe, you know what else I was going to say.
I don't, and I never will.
All right. Dan. Gwendolyn Christie joins Tim Burton's Addams Family show Wednesday on Netflix. Not the day Wednesday, the show Wednesday.
Yes. Literally, we mentioned Wednesday Addams earlier in the show, coincidentally enough. They're making this show on Netflix. Tim Burton feels like a natural fit for Addams Family because he likes all the, you know, spooky, ooky kind of black and white imagery stuff. And Gwendolyn Christie is great, and she's tall, and she's in The Sandman, and I'm sure she'll do a great job on Tim Burton's Addams Family show. Yes. All right. And finally, Sarah Beth, would you please bring us home with this final bit of news, which is a special visual special. HBO Max releases the first look at its Peacemaker series starring John Cena. Are you interested?
You know what? I am. And I would say the same thing about the Penguin. Like, I really like that Warner Brothers is investing in these characters. And obviously, James Gunn created these characters and developed these characters for the Suicide Squad. But being able to flesh them out even more, and John Cena's character is so memorable. Yeah. I think it's a really great opportunity to, to not have to just have these one-off characters.
Cool. Yeah, I agree. It's kind of like they're doing the Marvel TV Loki WandaVision thing, or they're going to try, and we'll see how it goes. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this was a great show. Sarah, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks,
everybody, for
Thank
watching.
Thank you for having me.
If all y'all out there are interested in more Take the Black content, we do have something called the WIC Club that I'll leave right here in the chat. And it's also in the description of also our YouTube and our Facebook vidges, where we give you extra articles, extra videos, and a prize every month. So feel free to check that out. And we, of course, stream live for free every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time here on the Winter is Coming Facebook page and the Winter is Coming YouTube page. And you should come and watch us. And thank you so much for watching us now. Thanks, Julie. See you next week. And podcast-wise, I forget. Wherever podcasts are available, like Google Play and iTunes and so forth. So thanks for watching, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.